everybody. Welcome to Popcorn with Candy, the show where we go through the films of the late, great John Candy in close to chronological order. It's been a while, so I think that's how the intro goes. I am Octopus Caveman.
And I'm Peter. I remember how this goes. You want me to do it?
Yeah, go for it. So this week we're talking about Brewster's Millions from 1985.
I love this movie.
I liked this movie growing up, and I enjoy this movie now.
Okay, I was about to get mad at you.
I mean, I enjoy it, but I don't know. It's a tough movie. It's kind of got a weird ending. It just kind of just stops.
It tells the story, and you don't need more.
I don't know. I think it needed a little bit more of a wrap-up at the end. I don't hate the ending, but you could have ended with just like an after-credit sequence of, you know.
They didn't do that back then, and you would have gotten still frames with a little paragraph or a couple sentences explaining what happens, and those aren't fun.
Yeah. It's a very bizarre movie. So this is starring Richard Pryor, John Candy, Jerry Orbach from Law & Order.
Yep.
And Stephen Collins. He is from Seventh Heaven, and recently, did you hear about him in the news?
I know all about that, yeah.
A little creepy to see him in this. I liked his performance in this. It's just bizarre. It's one of those things like Cosby. Like, I like Bill Cosby's stand-up. I can't like the man. Stephen Collins does a good job in this, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
It's really creepy.
Yeah.
The greatest actor name in the world is in this.
Which one?
Rupert Horne is...
Rupert Horne is great.
Hume Cronin.
Yes, from Cocoon, from... what else? He's done so many other great movies.
A ton of stuff. And he's great in this, but he's got the most hilarious name ever. Hume Cronin.
It's a little weird, but... Old guys had awesome names.
It's almost like a Star Trek alien language name. I am Hume Cronin from the planet...
Yeah, that's a little weird.
David White is in this.
David White is.
He was in Bewitched.
The TV show?
Yeah.
Who was he?
He is the dude with the gray hair, gray mustache. He's one of the dudes at the law firm.
Okay.
But he was Darren's buddy in Bewitched.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It was so great to see him in this.
I remember now. Yeah. He put on some weight.
Yakov Smirnoff is in this? As the cab driver, he's the, in Moscow, the road forks you.
Okay. He didn't say that, did he?
No, but like that, he's like where that comedy style come from. In okay. Soviet Russia, you know.
Okay.
That's that guy. He's also in Moscow on the Hudson. Great.
Don't know it.
Oh, Robin Williams is that. Oh, man. You would know it. You would see like 5 minutes and you'd be like, oh, yeah, childhood.
Maybe.
And Rick Moranis.
Great part.
He's so good. It's yes. Just like a small part, but he's so good.
He's great in it.
And he's not like a typical Rick role.
Oh, no.
Oh, you got to throw that in right now. Never go to... Some of his early work, and I think we've got some more of him coming up in, what, Summer Rental with Eugene Levy?
And The Last Polka.
Yeah, it's very un-Rick, you know?
He's great.
Yeah, he's so good, but he's not... It's like before he got typecast as yeah. Louis Tully, yeah. You know? So it's kind of cool to see him have this range. This is a remake of a 1945 film, which is a remake of a 1935 film, which is a remake of a 1921 film, which is a remake of a 1914 film, which is an adaptation of a 1906 play, which is an adaptation of a 1902 novel.
I want to go back and see some of those.
I want to see the three Bollywood versions. There are three Bollywood versions of this.
Oh my goodness, that's my goal now.
Yeah.
I own Fight Club, the Bollywood version.
I want to see what is it, the Terminator? Bollywood Terminator looks amazing.
They look weird.
But yeah, but
I want to go see that now.
In what I was reading about them, apparently they're really close to this movie. The story is similar. They've just thrown in dance and song sequences.
Nice.
So this was based on a novel by George Barr McCutcheon. He wrote it under a surname. But what's fascinating is I was reading into the book because I was just curious. There's so many adaptations. At one point, 1926, they did Miss Brewster's Millions.
Weird.
The weirdest adaptation was Punky Brewster had a cartoon. P- Punky Brewster's Millions.
That's awesome.
That was an episode.
I'm going to go find that.
I watched some of it.
Yeah?
It's so hard to get through.
Yeah.
But the original novel seemed like a more interesting take on this story. So in the original novel, guy has a grandfather that dies, gives him $1 million. Guy has another grandfather that dies, and he's like, you have to spend all of your grandfather's money or you get none of mine. And he's going to give him $7 million.
Wow.
That's kind of an interesting take. And then in that one, they stipulate tipping. So like it's like you can only tip so much, and it goes more into the detail of...
detailed version of this. Like the 5% you can gamble, the 5% you can donate.
There's a lot of questions with like the details of this. You kind of just have to let it go.
Yeah. Honestly, the 5% he could donate, we get to in it, and that's what his gambling winnings. It's $1.5 million he's allowed to donate.
But does that percentage go up with more the more he wins? That's the thing. Like, you can get into really...
I would assume no.
This would have been like a 40-page contract for him to sign. Like, just all of these details.
Yeah.
It would have been more intense than, like, lottery winning.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is intense. I mean, this is a cool thing to revisit. I'm glad I own this.
Yeah. Before we go farther, we should say, if you haven't seen this, watch it. It's so worth watching before we ruin it for you.
I mean, watch them all. There's 10 of them.
Well, at least watch this one. This is a great one.
Are we going to do popcorn with on the 3 Bollywood versions?
Popcorn with Bollywood.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Oh, new podcast.
I'm in.
I'm kind of into that, too. Except, like, they would have to be so long, because the movies are, like, 4 hours long.
Yeah, they're pretty rough.
All right. Opens on the baseball game.
Yeah. Hackensack Bulls. I've found out that the stadium is in Southern California.
Does it have a real train track running through it?
I don't know if it does anymore, but there are train tracks running nearby. And I read somewhere that they probably built those tracks and ran the train through just for the movie.
It looked very much like a fake train.
Yeah, probably.
Or at least like some sort of set train. But where in California? Because it's got like a factory in the background.
San Bernardino. County, somewhere out there.
Yeah, that makes sense. Is that a slam on San Bernardino? I'm like, yeah, it looks terrible.
I'm okay with that.
I live in that county.
Is anybody going to complain? Nobody's going to complain about us picking on San Bernardino.
I spend a lot of time in San Bernardino. I don't need to start beef. San Bernardino, a bit like Jersey.
Hey, it fits.
Own it. New San Bernardino slogan.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
We're like New Jersey, way back in the day. So it opens up on the game with Monty Brewster and Spike Nolan.
There in the baseball game, there is some of the best 80s extra work ever.
Yeah?
They are remarkable. They're almost like the Wally George audience. You remember Hot Seat with Wally George?
Nope.
Oh, Public Access. Rebecca De Mornay's daddy had the weird blonde bowl cut. You just scream about stuff. Oh, he's fascinating. But this is like amazing, super 80s. Everybody's in Wayfarers. Women are in teased hair. Everybody's in a tank top. It's super good. How weird is the Star Wars opening to this?
Like a scroll?
Yeah, it starts with a credit scroll. Like,
yeah, it was a little interesting.
There's a few uses of it, and I guess it's an interesting choice. It kind of works, but just bizarre.
Yeah. But everything back then was kind of bizarre, and it was kind of the 70s style.
Well, I didn't bring this up. This is directed by Walter Hill, which is a really weird thing. He did 48 Hours, The Warriors. This is like the only comedy movie he did.
Wow.
It's a weird choice for him.
Yeah.
So he said he just did this to line his pockets. Kind of interesting. The movie he did after this was Crossroads with Ralph Macchio.
Don't know it.
You got to check it out. It's so good. Ralph Macchio just is a blues musician, and it's all about people selling their soul down at the crossroads.
Okay.
Another really weird choice. This must have been like Walter Hill's like... line in his pockets or drug days or something. But I mean, for a guy who doesn't do comedy, he does this well.
Well, he had a great cast.
Yeah.
Like, you want comedy, these are the guys you want.
This is post-burnt himself with crack Richard Pryor, though, I think.
Yeah.
So he's pretty subdued from what you're used to seeing. I mean, he's good in this, but...
he's awesome in this.
Yeah.
They both are.
John Candy's fantastic in this.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so they have to take a break from the train going through the stadium. And Richard Pryor as Monty Brewster is freaking out because there's a guy in the stands taking pictures, and he thinks it's a scout. John Candy as Spike Nolan.
Oh, you even got his last name. I didn't even pick
it. He says it a couple of times. Huh. As Spike, he's like, oh, this is Jersey. Scouts don't come to Jersey. It's great.
I wonder if they come to San Bernardino.
Probably not.
John Candy's his trash talk is so good.
He is amazing. It's great.
What is it about? I mean, is that a thing that goes down in baseball? Because every baseball movie has the trash talk and catcher.
I don't know, but it's great.
It is good.
This is one of the best.
This is good.
So he's flirting with the girl in the stands, and it turns out to be the girl rooting for the guy at bat, the big guy that John Candy's trash talking. And he strikes him out, and they win the game.
When John is kind of giving the pep talk on the mound, he mentions, like, if you strike him out and we win, I'm going to go out and get you drunk. But, like, wouldn't they do that if they lost, too?
Probably. But he's offering to buy, basically.
Right.
And then we go to a bar, and he's flirting with those girls, or that girl and the girl that was with her.
John does the open the bottle with his teeth maneuver.
Yeah. And the girl with a weird accent goes, that's attractive.
That's a weird couple of broads they're hitting on.
Yeah. They turn out to be the girls that are with the other team.
Yeah. And the scout dude, the dude who's been photographing Brewster, is on the phone.
Yeah, he's at a payphone talking to the law firm, I guess. But they get these girls to go back to the bus with them.
Yeah, they kind of agree to it. There's some talk in there. John Candy has a line about an Oriental doctor.
And about the massaging. And how you're supposed to do it without clothes?
The massage thing is okay, but I mean, it's kind of a good move. Like, this is how we do it. It kind of breaks that physical contact barrier move. But the whole thing about the Oriental doctor kind of had me thinking, like, this was like the last, there's like a borderline when you can say things, right? Like, there was a moment where Oriental wasn't cool to say anymore. This is like right on the cusp. Like, shortly after this, it was like, oh yeah, that's kind of insensitive. He squeezed this one in. So we have Rudy shows up to fight.
And some girl runs to a phone and calls the cops at this moment. Yeah. They're just talking to each other.
There's going to be a fight.
It was great.
I mean, she's seen 80s movies, so she knows what's up.
Must have just watched Roadhouse.
Yeah, and the fight is short and like,
it's funny and dumb, but Monty can take a punch.
Yeah. I don't have him in here as Monty at all. He's just Brewster. He's a titular character. How can you call him Monty?
Because Spike calls him Monty all the time.
Yeah, I guess. The jail scene is awesome. I love that John is just like, I mean, I'm in here too, so it's clearly not a racial thing.
And then Jerry Orbach shows up.
He does. I think his character's name is Charlie.
Yeah, Charlie.
He shows up in jail to fire him. If you were going to fire him, wouldn't you just, like, write him off? The fact that he shows up in person to just be like them. I'm going to make it worse and fire you.
He must like them, and he came to say, sorry, I'm not bailing you out.
I think so. And then they go to court.
And Spike tries to sweet-talk the judge.
Did you notice who the judge was?
No, I don't know who she is.
Rosetta Lenoir, or Lenore, who is the grandmother on Family Matters.
That was her?
That's her. I looked it up.
That's awesome.
It's so good. John's got his whole guilty with a good excuse.
Yeah. Just sweet talking the judge and she won't have any of it.
The thing I picked up on is this seems to be like they got into a bar fight, were put into a cell. This seems to be like this is the next day.
Their arraignment, yeah.
Right. The judge mentions she has depositions from a dozen eyewitnesses. You and I know enough about the law that it's like, for you to have a dozen depositions done, you're already like a year into the case.
They're probably just handwritten statements from cops that she's calling depositions.
I think it's one of those things where they threw in courthouse terms, right? Yeah. Like, you'll be like, objection, overruled, sustained. It's just like, it's just legal word salad. And they're like, depositions. Like, she could have said eyewitness testimony or statements.
There you go,
But they were just like, let's law this up. What's a law word? Depositions.
Yeah. It works.
For me, I was just like, how long was it? Were they in jail? Like, Jesus.
Yeah. The scout jumps up and pays their fines, offers to pay the bail, but since they should now say they're guilty, he's willing to pay their fines.
Yeah, and Brewster thinks it's a it's the scout bailing him out to take him to the Yankees or the whatever.
Mets. He's talking about the Mets.
The Mets at first, yeah.
And then they get to a building, and Spike gets all mad. There's no Mets in this building.
Right.
And he calls him a cop, yells at him cop face, and all that stuff.
It's they're going to the Granville Baxter office. The guy shows him the card. Basically, he was hired by Granville Baxter.
Yeah. So they walk into the law office and go up to the secretary and let him know he's there. And as she's walking away, he's like, the arm's okay. And she's like, what?
Yeah.
Great, just confusing randomly. Surgery went great. And just, okay. She just walks away.
In the office, this is where we have David White and a few other really noticeable dudes.
I like the scene where Spike and the scout cop guy go to sit down and they argue over the magazine and just Spike gets it.
Them just constantly like feuding is pretty good throughout this whole thing.
Yeah, Spike just doesn't trust him.
I felt like that is a missed opportunity there because if you throw Joe Flaherty in that role, that would have just killed it for me. That would have been so good.
That might have been good, but it might have just kind of thrown off the I don't know. Yeah, they just
I don't know.
It just fit. Just this guy that he doesn't trust, doesn't know. Just it would be weird if it was one of their friends.
Yeah, I don't think so. I would have liked to have seen Joe in there. So he gets told about, what's his grandfather, Horn?
His great-uncle.
Great-uncle. And it's Cronin. The guy is so good in this, but so I felt like the race issues in this movie, there's racial jokes, but aside from the Oriental thing, they're not really offensive, at least to me. I thought like they dealt with it in like a humorous and decent way.
I was really bothered. What, are you surprised you have a honky uncle?
I thought that was funny, and then him talking about like checkered family history, right? Like,
yeah,
it's
just, yeah.
It's pretty funny without being offensive, because we've had a lot of insensitive, offensive, racist stuff in these movies.
This was done pretty well.
Yeah. So I really liked Hume Cronin.
Yeah, he was great. And the story about why he's doing this, I'm going to make you hate spending money.
Yeah, like... And he tells a story about being locked in a closet with nothing but cigars and matches. He had to smoke them all. And he's like breathing through an oxygen machine. Like that clearly screwed him up.
Yeah, he died from it.
Yeah.
His dad killed him.
I had another note. Like how weird must it be to be Hume Cronin and play a dying guy when you're probably pretty close to death already?
Maybe.
That's got to be a weird move. He didn't live long after this.
He did a good amount of movies that are like this. Look at Cocoon.
Yeah. It's just gotta be a weird feeling to be like, I'm gonna die any day now in a movie, and then you die.
Old actors do this all the time.
That's a weird feeling. It's just like the ladies who sign up to be like fat lady number two on Married with Children, right? Like, that's gonna be like a bummer. So the deal is he's gotta spend $30 million in 30 days to inherit $300 million.
Without telling anyone what you're doing.
That makes it like complicated, but I mean... It's not too complicated if you don't have close friends. And couldn't you just tell Spike, like, look.
He does. He says, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I'm not.
Right. But Spike kind of ignores him.
Yeah, they all ignore him.
So he can't own anything.
Can have no assets.
And he can't destroy valuables.
Yes, and I think he kind of breaks that rule, but he can get away with it because of what he does.
Well, he can't give anything away, but then he constantly gives things away. Like, he mentions he can't go buy the Hope Diamond and give it to some girl.
No, but he goes and has lunch with a couple hundred people at $200 a head.
And rents out the top two floors of a building?
Yeah.
And couldn't you just, if you had to, I think you could get rid of this in a day. Based on the things that he was able to do here... You could just go to a restaurant and just be like, hey, guess what? For the next month, everything's free. Here's $30 million.
Maybe.
He can hire people and he could set the rate as well.
Yes.
So why does he lowball these people like $10,000 a week for a photographer?
Well, that's why he keeps going up.
I would just be like, here's $30 million. Be my photographer for the month. Right? Like, done.
Yeah.
Sign the papers, guys. He buys TV time. So I did the math on this. It's about $4.5 million for a 30-second Super Bowl ad. 4 minutes of Super Bowl time, you know? Just done. Like, oh, Super Bowl just passed. I'll buy it for next year.
Well, he bought advertising all across the country just in case New Yorkers were out of state.
Here's the thing. Why is there not a porn parody of this movie?
I don't want to know about that.
Because think about, like, Brewster's Millions, like, spend this $30 million. What's the easiest way to get rid of that? You can't own anything. It's basically services.
I'm not responding.
So I think it was a 4.5-minute Super Bowl ad based on the math I saw. You could have this done in a day.
But he tries other things first, and a lot of them backfire.
He tries stupid things, though. If you know you can just rent out floors or have a hotel room and just be like, all my friends are staying here for the month, why not do that everywhere? Why not, like, do some good and, like, buy a ton of food and send it to Africa? If you can just feed people like that.
Well, that's donating.
Is it?
Yeah.
Can you go and just, I mean, like.
Yeah, at some point it's all donating.
Feeding people at lunch?
Nobody could help him. He had to come up with this out of his own head. And he does a great job.
He does. So, I mean, the thing is, this movie makes you think about, like, well, how would I do it?
I mean, there are a lot of things I would have done differently.
But. Like, you can't do drugs because there's no receipts.
Yeah.
I guess that's the problem with the prostitution thing, too. There's no receipts.
So they agree on 30 days at midnight that night. And he gets introduced to Mrs. Drake, or Miss Drake.
Yeah, Angela Drake.
And he gets googly-eyed for her right away.
So he's stoked. Spike's stoked. He tells him he inherited $30 million. That was a bit confusing because
Spike thinks something's wrong because he's freaking out.
Yeah.
And he says, I just inherited $30 million. Oh, is that all? I love that. That was a great line from Spike.
Yeah. And he hires that, like, sleazy photographer guy for $10,000 a week.
Yeah.
I just think if you could set the prices.
He's learning how to do it. That's the first thing he does.
Yeah. I mean, this is done in an hour. I would have this done. I would be prepared for this. Granted, I've seen this movie, but I would be ready to go. What do you think a nuke costs? You buy one of those on the black market.
With a receipt?
I mean, probably.
No.
From Russia. Talk to my cab driver, Yakov Smirnov.
No, I like the renting things. I like the fact that he rents outfits.
Yeah, he leases all of his clothes.
Yeah.
But they're tailored to suit him, like tailored to fit.
Well, I like what he does. They go across the street to the bank, and they open the vault, and there's three pallets of cash.
Yeah.
Like Breaking Bad style.
It's smaller than the Breaking Bad pile.
Yeah, but there are three of them. It's basically $10 million in each pallet.
Yeah.
He says, okay, I want $3 million right now. And Spike says, no, you don't carry around that much cash. You need guards. He's like, okay, you guys. Give me 30 or 12 guards.
Is it 12? I don't remember.
I don't remember. He walks up to one. I'll give you this much to be the head of security and get me 12 guys or whatever he says.
Yeah.
And pay them this much a week. It's great. He just basically steals the employees from the bank.
Yeah, that's great. And they're happy and just walk on out with him.
Yeah.
So at some point he calls the dugout during a game and talks to Charlie.
Yeah, right here. He leaves the bank.
Yeah, he has to rent a quarter from his accountant.
Yeah, because he has to account for it.
Charlie doesn't believe him, clearly. But I love the fact that dude gets fired and the first thing he thinks is like, oh, I'm gonna help out my baseball team. And
yeah, like, it's great. That's like, all he cares about is he wants to play baseball.
Yeah.
This is where he meets the cab driver. He stops a cab and he says, you want to be my personal cab driver for $5,000 a week? And the guy's got the greatest line. You want to hire POS cab for $5,000 a week? And then Spike says, you don't want a cab, you want a limousine. It's like, you know where to rent limousines? I love it. He hires a cab driver to be the head of his fleet of limousines.
Yeah, he hires him and like 20 friends or something.
Yeah, he tells him to get limousines and that's it.
I mean, I was with him on the hire people thing.
Yeah.
Hire people right away. But I think the smartest plan is to do things that will generate goodwill for you.
Yes.
Right? So sort of later on he does that, but that would be the way to do it. Like blow it all in advertising. You know?
That's a good way to just get rid of it. Done.
Yeah. And then you technically don't have any assets other than goodwill, which is sort of this.
Parties and advertising. That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Because you're entertaining yourself and everybody around you, and you get to tell people all about it.
Yeah. Parties for the homeless.
There you go.
Pay off people's tickets and court fines. Yeah. Hang out of court all day. Well, I mean, maybe that
might be
charity.
Donation or charity. Yeah,
so muddy. I got to read this contract. I got to see if there's changes in the Indian ones, because I'll bet there's some really fascinating cultural things. Like,
yeah,
I want to watch all three of them.
Yeah,
I'm into it.
Okay, so he invites the entire crowd that's mobbing around him to lunch and says, "I'm buying," which is great. They get to a classy restaurant, and offers $100 a head. No, $200 a head. And what's your most expensive wine? $400 a bottle? All around.
He turns a five-star, like Michelin-rated, beautiful, fine dining experience into a bustling Denny's.
Yeah. Yeah. Crowded, horrible people everywhere. But the restaurant's handling it well.
Yeah.
The photographer tries to steal silverware and stuff and an ashtray. Spike stops him.
Yeah. This was just one of those scenes like, oh, weird. Spike's a good dude.
But it's also just the relationship's building for everybody because we find out Miss Drake is engaged. And she says, I doubt that you can ever buy Warren.
Yeah. This is really well done as far as the character development and backstory goes. Kind of shoehorning it into the plot.
Yeah.
It's really well done.
Yeah.
A lot of movies need to watch this. Rather than just, you have those weird bits of dialogue in some movies. Where it's like, Peter, you're my brother. You remember when we were kids and mom always took, like, they just shoehorn in weird dialogue like that?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like when you were there for me through my divorce and when, you know, this doesn't do that. It really seamless job of doing that.
Right. You just know their friends by the way they act.
Right.
You know all of it. It's great. So then we get to the news reporter at the plaza.
I forgot, this Chuck Feinstein, something like that.
Something.
The guy was great.
He stops Monty and asks him a question, and he's like, well, you're going to have to talk to my senior vice president, Spike Nolan.
And Spike was just mentioning at lunch that, like, I'm not an employee, I'm his friend, I don't want a job.
Right.
And it's kind of weird that immediately afterwards
he celebrates like crazy.
Gets a job.
You're getting a job for $100,000 a week or something like that. That's exciting.
You know what would be perfect to do? I would just walk around with stacks of cash and make people do weird stuff.
Yeah, I want to see somebody do this.
Yeah.
There was a TV show that did that, wasn't there?
I think so.
Like an MTV TV show?
Yeah,
MTV,
you're right. Yeah, the one with Morgan Spurlock.
I don't remember.
And it was like, drink a bottle of hot sauce. Here's $50. I'm like, nah, I won't. Here's $100.
You just see what it takes for somebody to do it?
Yeah, I forgot what it was called, but I mean, I would...
The end of MTV?
MTV goes reality.
Yeah. And I love Spike's reaction. Can I say something to all the people who thought I was a loser?
Yeah.
It's great.
He rents out a hotel.
Yep. Top two floors for $1 million cash.
Yeah.
Somebody else had it for the next 2 weeks. But nope. $1 million cash, it's mine.
For the hotel, I mean, they can just, like, there's a delay.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
We'll give you the next two floors down.
Right. Or a discount.
Yeah.
And then some time passes. I think we have one of those weird title cards.
There's a quote. New York Daily News. Like I was saying, I can't speak for Monty, but speaking for myself, Monty pitches and I catch. The money won't change us. Spike Nolan.
That sounds like it's from like the porn parody.
Yeah, that, I was a little worried about Monty pitches and I catch. Money won't change us.
So the next scene, we have Spike all classy after time has passed, and he has that.
I don't know about classy, but classed up a bit.
Yeah, he's got that killer gold catcher's mask around his neck.
I love it. It's so good. I kept thinking Flavor Flav, but...
It is. Yeah, that came to mind immediately, too.
But I love it.
It was meant for Johnny Bench, but he never picked it up.
Yeah, and he wears it for the rest of the movie. It's great.
It's a pretty killer neck piece. And then Warren Cox comes in for a meeting.
Well, he's getting fitted for his suits. They're great. And he looks over at them. Do you guys think I'm a lowlife? No, Mr. Brewster, not with these clothes. I love it. And then Warren Cox.
And he's got a fundraiser going to ban contact sports.
Yeah. Yeah. And he asks, not baseball, right? No, baseball's safe.
It's such like a white puss dude thing. Like, oh, we got to ban contact sports.
Yeah, he's a loser. And you can tell. Especially right here. No, I don't drink alcohol. And then...
That makes him a loser?
No. The way he does it all. I don't drink alcohol. I'd like to donate to your benefit. How's $100,000? Sure. Have a drink. I will. But you don't drink. One drink won't hurt.
Yeah.
It's great. Just the progression of, oh, I'm bought.
It's such a boss move to just right in front of his fiance like that, just be like, oh yeah, I remember when you said I can't buy him? Boom, I just bought him. It's so bizarre to watch him in this, Stephen Collins.
Yeah. He's just a loser in this. It's great.
It's a really good performance. It's just really spooky to watch a guy who's done detestable things.
Well, yeah, there's that. But I don't know. I want to get past that and just watch the movie. Come on. Okay, so he comes in and he just right away starts critiquing the decor. Just like a jerk, kind of. It's not like he owns this place. He's renting it from a hotel. He just got it like the day before.
He's instantly hateable.
Yeah. And he explains, oh, my ex-wife was a decorator. Well, she's your ex-wife and you're here with your fiance.
This movie is due for a reboot. Because this is so... I mean, you cannot complain because this is a reboot, essentially.
I know, but...
But the social...
This is a movie I know.
And the social atmosphere is perfect for this sort of, like, regular dude meets...
Long enough, yeah.
I think it's kind of perfect for it.
But how do you replace these two?
I mean, I'm sure they said that about, like, whoever was in the 19...
Name one.
Yeah, I mean, you go back, there's some old dudes.
Yeah, but these guys are perfect for this movie.
They're and good.
Any remake of this would suck now.
I don't think you could say that. It's like Romeo and Juliet or Hamlet. Like, you can continue to rework that story. This is a classic story.
Footloose?
No.
Dirty Dancing? Roadhouse?
Those aren't necessarily classic. Those are super 80s.
But those are movies that are going to be remade or have been remade, and they got to suck now.
Right, but I think this is one of those timeless stories where you can remake it. Because there's always going to be sort of a socioeconomic, like, disparity. So having, like, a poor guy enter this world, and it's always going to be a winner, I think.
I think Mr. Deeds put this off a little farther, a remake.
Which one? The remake of Mr. Deeds? Yes, or the
recent remake of Mr. Deeds, because it's a kind of similar storyline, and it just kind of, nobody wants something like that right now.
I like Mr. Deeds.
I do, too.
And that was 20 years ago.
Oh, God. No, it wasn't.
Are you sure? It was at least like 15.
You're going to make me check.
It's pre-9/11.
Was it?
Yeah.
2002.
Post-9/11. But yeah, 2002, that's 14 years ago.
14, that's not 20. That's a big difference.
No, that's time. We could use one of these. They need to reboot this. We should write it, sell it to the studios. Like, look, this thing's public domain, this story.
Let's get both their kids to do it.
Whoa. Richard Pryor has a kid?
I think so.
He's probably got a few.
Yeah. So he's going on and on about his ex-wife. And it's just really annoying. Like, if I was her, I'd be upset. Like, stop talking about her.
Yeah. I mean, she is upset just from the situation.
Yeah.
The fact that their relationship continues after this is bizarre. But yeah. It's
great that he's like, I want you to decorate this room. But I'm a lawyer. No. Bring your ex-wife in. See, I'll pay her.
This is some of the stuff that I would do with that money. I mean, it would be like, I would hire a birthday clown and be like, guess what? You're the chef. Like, just, I mean, it would be one of those things. It's like.
Well, this was him testing. See, can he really buy Warren? And he totally does.
He does. But, I mean, that's how I would have spent my money.
I love it. He walks them out the door, closes the door, turns around. Now that is a real a-hole.
I mean, he's the guy who just pulled, like, the massive butthole maneuver of, like, flaunting it in Angela's face.
Right, but I think he was testing him. I think that's what he was doing.
And yeah.
He realizes, oh, well, he's not who he says he is to her.
Yeah, you're right, because he doesn't know him. He was sort of testing him.
Yeah, and he says it at the camera, looking right at us, saying, now that's a real a-hole.
It's a real Zach Morris move.
Yeah.
So Warren meets with the firm. They basically want him to be... In their back pocket, be sort of their man on the inside.
They don't exactly tell him, but they talk about how this guy that died was a really important client. And they want him to just tell them what's going on.
Yeah.
And they let him take a month off so he could be a decorator.
And the next scene, we have Brewster waking up, and we have Rick Moranis.
Yes. I like that he walks out to the head of the security guy. He's like, do you think I'm crazy? Of course not. Let's do business. It's great.
And yeah, he sort of walks him through this long shot. Rick Moranis apparently is hired to just say whatever he says.
Yeah, he's Morty King, the King of Mimics.
It's such a bizarre and amazing character.
It is. Well, Monty basically announced on the news that he's looking to hire people. Anybody.
Right, come on down to the office. Come on down.
Yeah, so he shows up and he introduces himself just by mimicking everything people say. And it's great.
He
annoys the heck out of people and they love it.
Including Monty.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's talking to Marilyn the decorator.
Who knocks over Warren. And we get a slide whistle.
Yes.
That was the worst scene of the movie.
I don't think it was that bad.
Why do you need a slide whistle in this movie?
I don't
There's
know.
So much good comedy. Why a slide whistle?
It's just kicking it old school.
It was so dumb. I was so thrown off by that.
Just taking ideas from different people. The iceberg idea is kind of genius.
I like it. I like it.
Dude wants to put a motor on an iceberg and sail it to Africa for farmers.
Isn't there a movie that does that? Like, that's a real plot in a superhero movie?
I don't know.
I don't remember, but I love it.
It seems like a killer idea.
Somebody proposed that idea last year.
Really?
I read that online. Somebody was actually going to take an iceberg and take it somewhere.
Somebody was just, like, stoned and watching this movie.
Maybe. Maybe. But there was a real business starting to plans to do that.
Wow. I mean, it's a decent idea if you can work it out.
Yeah. Especially now. They're just falling off.
And the guy has all of the go-to comebacks. Like, he talks about, well, how much is going to melt? Well, we'll lose about 18%. I mean, it seems... I'll bet the idea existed before this movie. I'm sure this...
Probably.
It was probably in the novel in 1902.
Yeah, but just somebody thought that idea was hilarious.
In the novel, the dude was going to put a sail on it.
I like that. Did you catch Marilyn's wedding gift idea for Warren?
Yeah, she was going to decorate the apartment for Angela and her.
Isn't that just like a, I'm going to decorate your apartment?
It's such a lady move.
Yeah.
It's one of those just like weird underhand.
Ex-wife things. Yeah. I'm gonna get the new wife.
Yeah.
You have the living room I decorated.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love that.
And then the gambling stuff comes up. Gambling is the biggest mistake.
You're right, but he's allowed to gamble it away. Honestly, he should have gone to a table with a set amount and just bet until it was gone. No matter what, just keep betting until it's gone.
Yeah, roulette. He was able to gamble away, I think, 5%.
5%. That's not 1.5 million.
He could have just sat at a roulette table.
Until it was all gone. Put it all on red.
Not even on red. Put it on like 37.
There you go. And just, if it's gone,
great. Put it on 35, his jersey number.
Yeah. If it's gone, great. If it comes back, just bet it again. You will lose it if you want.
Tip the dealer an appropriate amount.
There you go.
Play again.
Yeah.
Man.
Let it ride. Just...
Guys, I mean, I need an uncle, a rich uncle, to do this. He wants to play long shots.
$5,000 on every long shot for the weekend.
There's so many. You're bound to hit on one of them, though.
But then he puts $50,000 on Loyola versus Notre Dame women's field hockey.
Could he have just bought $30 million in lottery tickets?
Probably not.
No.
No, why? Because it's gambling.
Is it? Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that is gambling.
So he's renting the team and fixing up the stadium.
Spoiler alert, Punky Brewster's millions. They buy lottery tickets.
Okay, thanks. You just ruined it for me.
I didn't spoil the ending. It's got an interesting twist.
So he's fixing up the stadium for a big game he's going to have with the Yankees.
Charlie believes him now when he calls.
Yeah.
Did you... We go to this scene where they're getting ready for the practice and... The Statue of Liberty has, like, scaffold all over it.
Yep.
You notice that?
Yep.
What's that all about?
It was being refurbished.
Huh.
When we were young, we were in New York, and I saw the Statue of Liberty in scaffolding.
Wow.
So it was about then.
Yeah, it's the first I had seen it, I guess, except for being a baby. It was just interesting to see in the background.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's paying for an exhibition game against the Yankees, which probably would eat up your $30 million.
Nowadays, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, just getting like a handful of those guys to show up. You're like, well, his appearance fee is 14 or whatever. No,
just pay the team and say make it mandatory for the team.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a smart way to spend your money, I think. Show off your pitching skills. Everybody's going to be interested. But the way he gets his team there is so bizarre. He sort of shuttles them and flies them and helicopters them around.
There's a band when their team arrives.
Right, so they arrive via helicopter, and then they're going to get back on a bus to go back to the practice field. It's like, well, there's...
Long Island, yeah.
Yeah, the band wouldn't come to the island, so...
The airport wouldn't allow the band on the runway.
Right, but they weren't allowed near the field. He was clearly just shuttling them around, wasting money.
So we have a baseball practice montage.
And then we cut to Brewster getting busy with a lady.
Yes, and Miss Drake calls up and wants to spend time with him. And so he kicks her out.
It seems like such a setup when you watch this. So yeah, he chases off the floozy, and it's a trick by Spike to get him to meet this money advisor guy.
It's an intervention.
Yeah.
I love that the girl walks to the elevator as they're getting out, and Spike says, she's really a nice girl. It's great. So he turns the financial advisor in his favor.
He hires him. It doesn't seem to be in his favor, because that guy is incentivized to make him money.
Right, but it's an opportunity to spend more money. So he spends more money on this guy. $200,000 a week.
But the guy makes money 85% of the time for his clients.
Right.
That seems like a bad move.
He didn't want him to do anything. He just wanted to hire him.
Right. But, I mean, if you hire a guy and say 15% of the profit, he's going to hustle.
But he's doing the right thing by hiring him and not letting him do anything. It's Spike that takes some of his money and lets the guy do stuff.
Yeah, you're right. So then we have him and Spike having a catch in the penthouse.
Yes. After he tells Miss Drake to get home before the sun comes up and does the bat noises, and it was funny.
It's a weird move.
It was weird,
yeah. He's just being, like, awful to each other. While they're having a catch, he has the stamps idea.
Yeah, they do talk about that. Spike gives him that idea.
The stamp store is super-duper brilliant.
It is. He buys the most expensive stamp.
And mails a letter. But why not buy every stamp in there and just mail letters just like...
He could have sent them a dozen postcards.
Right.
Yeah, he didn't have to do it once. He could have bought every expensive stamp there. Let me spend $5 million on stamps.
He spent like 1.5 on that stamp? Buy a ton of those. Buy 30.
Well, that was a one of a kind. Or that was 10. One of 10 is the only one left, remember?
Yeah. But he could have bought... It looked like a fancy stamp store. Yeah. It looked like a straight up like Harry Potter, like Diagon Alley, like fancy store with like little wooden shelves and stuff.
You could also go to a coin store.
Yeah.
Buy super rare silver dollars.
Buy a milkshake with a dollar.
That you spent $50,000 on because it was an error. And it puts that back in circulation and gets lost.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's a great idea.
Somebody comes up, oh, I got $50,000 because this is a super rare coin.
Spread the wealth.
Yeah. He's stimulating the economy like crazy.
So many ways he could have done this.
Yeah, because all those people that he's hiring, they're spending money like crazy. New York's economy just went crazy because of this movie.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's MC Hammer style. You just hire everybody.
I feel like he destroys the stamp's value. That is kind of breaking the rule. But because it's a stamp, he gets away with it.
It's a commodity, right? It's a usable item.
Right. But stamps have value until you use them. He destroyed that value.
You're right. But I don't know. I think it still stands under a commodity item.
But in a way, it's a piece of art.
Is it?
And once you use it, it's no longer art. I feel like that is using a piece of art and destroying the piece of art.
Oh, man. We got to read this contract.
I know.
I got to see what the Indian stamp looks like.
That one's pretty messed up.
We have Granville Baxter, and they're chatting a bit, and then the postcard shows up at that. One-of-a-kind stamp.
Yeah, they're laughing about it. I don't think he understands what he's doing.
Yeah, he just buys an asset.
And then they get a postcard. He used it and gets all mad. And then they start scheming with Warren.
Yeah, basically offer him a partnership and all that.
Yeah.
And just to screw him over. Just
right.
Figure out a way to sneak out with some money. And then back to Brewster. And the iceberg thing has been purchased by an oil company.
This is where everything goes wrong for Brewster.
Yeah.
Because... The iceberg company is purchased by an oil company.
The gambling pays off.
Every long shot. He wins $1.5 million from his long shots. And Loyola versus Notre Dame, Loyola won. So he won $1.5 million gambling.
Is it field hockey he bet on?
Women's field hockey. And right away he donates all that to charity. Tells her to pick up her favorite charities and he donates that money.
And that really impresses Angela.
Yes. This is where she wants him right now. I don't know about that, but she really likes him. I love the... This is business, and we're in business of doing business, so let's do business.
Yeah.
I want that quote. If I can find it, it's going in right here.
Let's make t-shirts.
Yeah.
And then Marilyn is done with the room.
And it is a super 80s dance TV show room.
Dude, it looks like Xanadu.
Or a really bad episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Kind of, yeah. It's like that.
Like
that,
Q.
It's a mix between Greek and 80s.
Yes.
Columns and neon. So... Brewster's going to take out Angela.
And she's still all over him because of the charity thing.
Yeah.
And he gives her a car. She finally accepts something. And she starts to back up and backs into somebody.
I didn't know if she backed into somebody or if the dude hit them. I thought the dude hit them.
I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Did he hire him to do that? It seemed...
No. The guy didn't know who he was. It was genuine. Monty Brewster.
Yeah. And then he pays him off.
What was it, $300,000 for a fender bender?
Yeah, he makes him fake an injury and all that. It's bizarre. Well,
he convinces him to lie. You got to get to a doctor. And the guy's an idiot and a jerk. I'm with her that the guy didn't deserve it, but whatever.
She gets pissed about him trying to buy off the dude.
Yeah, he wants to meet her family. She says, meet my family. What do you want to do, buy them?
Yeah, I kind of get it. Yeah. And then we have Marilyn and Warren watching from up top.
Yeah, thinking they're in a lover's spat or something.
It looks, I mean, from who knows what the height they're looking from, but it, I mean, they see him trying to stop her from and like calm her down.
And we go right to Warren and Miss Drake at a bar with everybody else Monty knows.
At this point, you kind of forget they were even together.
Well, they're fighting like they are an old married couple.
And he's spending all day with his ex-wife.
Yeah. So Monty runs into the guy that's kind of overseeing this contract, this deal.
Yes.
And he's like, I'm tired of being such an a-hole.
He's already sick of the money.
Yeah.
And then he buys everybody drinks.
Yeah.
This is kind of a, you know, it's a decent scene, but the stuff with Angela and Warren is kind of just...
Bleh. It's just in passing. It's, yeah. It's not necessary, but it fits.
Yeah, it's like they're fighting. Monty's getting sick. It shows the stress of everybody's going through. Yeah, Monty's sick of it. It's a necessary scene for sure.
Then back in the office, I guess the next day.
Yeah, he's watching baseball footage, watching his
pitching.
And this is where Spike comes in. He's invested some money, and he made $10 million.
And has the great $10 million little jingle. That's so perfect.
So he's back at zero. He now has $30 million again?
Yeah, he freaks out. Just completely snaps, kicks everybody out. And Spike's line, it's American money, you know.
And this is where Warren comes in and asks for $20,000 for a deposit and or something.
On his way out, does the whole... I'm being sneaky, look.
Yeah, well, I mean, the scene before they mention how about a $20,000 deposit, it was pretty obvious.
Yeah, $20,000 accident in his favor. That's right. All it needs. And it's perfect. I don't know how he slipped a deposit by Angela. She seems pretty good at her job, but maybe he forgot to give her the receipt or...
I don't know if Angela's there in the room at that point or...
She is.
Huh. But yeah, he's bummed out because he's back at zero again.
Right.
Wants to be alone, and he sees some election coverage in the news. This is brilliant.
He had a great breakdown after he kicked everybody out. It was a good...
It's a really good performance out of Richard Pryor, I gotta say.
I love the guy. He's great. And this is a great...
A much more subdued Richard Pryor than you're used to seeing, but this is some pretty good acting.
Yeah, it's not the over-the-top, like The Toy.
Right.
Or whatever Superman movie he did.
Oh, God, the worst one, Superman 4.
I don't remember it. Oh, I remember it, yeah. That was a bad movie. Yeah, so the political commentary inspires him. I like that the guy's like, neither choice is good. It's like what we're going through right now. Neither choice is good.
And this is where the next scene he has the none of the above press conference.
It's great.
His headshot in the back is so good.
Yeah?
It's just him kind of like shrugging in between the two candidates.
Yeah. That looks like a movie cover for one of his movies.
It does, kind of.
And then he's got a baseball shot of him. It's great.
He's got a TV spot that he does. It's kind of a montage of him just spending money on the campaign trail.
Yeah, being the most honest politician ever. I like at the press conference, Lynn Shea. She's the reporter that asked the question.
Yes, she's the lady from Kingpin. And
Something About Mary.
So much great stuff.
She is an amazing actress. I love her.
She is.
If I ever met her, I would want to hug her. Like, I love her.
It's great to see, like young, attractive her, too.
Yeah.
She's looking all right in this.
She doesn't look bad at all, but she's not as old as she looks in Something About Mary.
The thing is, in Something About Mary and in Kingpin...
And in Kingpin, they ugly her up.
Yeah, and then a couple other movies. She plays these uglied up characters, so it's, like, interesting to just see her, like, play, like...
Herself.
Yeah. I'm a reporter, and look, I can act and be normal.
Yeah, I love her. She's great.
I was curious if you picked that up. I forgot to note that, but she's great.
Yeah. And so we've got him doing the TV spot where he's like taking off the suit, complaining about it, about I don't want to be fake, these guys all lie.
There's a weird line in this montage where it's the guys at Granville Baxter, and one of them mentions he's running the ad in all 52 states.
Yeah, that was funny.
What is that all about?
It's all 50 states and territories, basically.
Is it? What, so Puerto Rico and...
Guam? I don't know. There might be more.
52 states, that just stood out as a little bit bizarre.
It was a weird way to say it. So we get the montage of the political stuff. He ends up leading in the polls. And then we get the candidates in a dark alley. Like, literally a really dark alley. They can barely see each other.
It's like the parking garage. It's the Watergate deep throat, like classic. Just, if you're having a clandestine meeting with a person, you're doing it in a dark parking garage.
Yeah. It works. And they're like, we both know what we need to do.
So they sue him. And he just settles for $4 million.
Yeah. They get this over with in just a montage of headlines. It's great.
It's really well done. The headlines propelling the story part, It's a really well-directed movie.
Yeah.
The after-court scene is so good because he's just like slamming him and Spike's trying to bail him out just like he doesn't mean that.
Yeah, I have my notes here. Okay, so he settles for $4 million and Spike is an awesome friend. That's my next note.
He is.
Because he's coming out saying all the exact same stuff. These guys are awful. Why would you want to have a $20,000 an hour job and spend $4 million or $40 million to get it unless you're planning on stealing it back? All this stuff. He's slamming these guys again after just settling for $4 million. It's great. But yeah, Spike is an awesome friend. If I ever had that much money, I would want a friend like that looking out for me.
And then we have the Yankee game. And Monty's giving him a pep talk.
Yep.
It's a little weird. Where's Charlie? Where's Jerry Orbach? Just, all right, Monty, you're rich. I mean, do whatever you
want. Here's 10 grand. I'm going to give the pep talk tonight.
You set this whole thing up. There's, during the game, Spike is talking to one of the guys about his record. And he meant, like, oh, did you see that? Or I watched that game and you had a home run and this. He calls an RBI a ribby.
Yeah. I've heard that before.
Have you?
Yeah.
I haven't. I thought that was weird. I was like, is this because John's Canadian and not a baseball guy? He's a football guy?
No, people call him ribbies. It's weird.
Really?
I don't like it, but I'm not a baseball guy. I'm not much of a sports guy.
I just learned something.
Monty says I can get any team out for three innings. And that's the goal of this game. He's playing three innings against the Yankees. So far, what we see right away, it's not going so good.
He's off to a bad start.
His team is keeping him up.
The team is killing it. The fielding is impressive. They're doing a great job.
Spike is heckling the hell out of the Yankees. An outfielder steals this great home run from somebody. It's great.
That's one of my favorite lines. There's so much good stuff with John Candy in this.
Yeah. And then the next batter talking about, oh, have you met his wife? Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
And we go to the furniture store.
And Warren's retrieving the deposit.
He's getting the $20,000 in cash back from that place. And the guy who's running that store is super recognizable 80s character actor.
Yeah. Overboard?
The best friend? Yes, he is, yeah. He's the friend who gets Kurt Russell the job at the docks.
Yeah,
and that guy
gets him the pictures.
I should have looked up his name. I feel like I'm doing him a disservice because I love that guy.
Yeah, the bad Photoshop.
Yeah.
Wasn't he Al Bundy's friend too?
I mean, I'm sure that guy did it Married with Children.
I really think he was in part of No Man or something.
Maybe.
That's admitting too much.
So the Yankees are up 4-1.
They get a home run.
A grand slam.
Grand slam, yeah, against Monty. So Monty's not doing so well, and he's pulled from the game.
It takes epic sack for Charlie to pull out the dude who paid for all of this to come together. Like, for him to just be like, I'm a coach still, I'm taking you out because you're throwing garbage.
It makes sense, and he takes it well. He's bummed. He leaves the field without fighting. He just looks bummed. That's it.
I was just impressed. I just noted that. Like, Charlie's a heck of a coach. Like, just, all right, we'll do this.
Yeah. And so Monty's a good sport.
Yeah, he goes out. He's in the locker room down below, and the dude from the law firm shows up. Like, the good dude from the law firm.
He's not from the law firm. He's a third party.
Is he?
He says it in the beginning. I'm a neutral third party.
Oh, I didn't pick up that line. I just thought he was like a dude at the law firm.
He's administering this challenge.
So he kind of gives him a pep talk a little bit.
Yeah. Says he's doing a good job. Monty decides to go withdraw from the elections and invites everybody at the baseball game to come to a party.
Yeah, because third party dude mentions, like, well, the job comes with a $60,000 salary, which
he looks like he's going to win.
Right. So he withdraws, and then he just decides to throw a party with his last $38,000. It's an expensive-ass party.
That's a lot of money, yeah, but it's the tamest Monty Brewster party yet.
Everybody's bummed.
It's only his employees, basically.
Drake is adding up the receipts, and she, you know, zeroes it out. And he kind of goes in there and asks her if she wants to go to the party, and she's furious at him.
Right.
And she walks out, and he says, I love you.
Yeah.
I was like, how? How do you love her?
I don't know.
You've been
superficial.
Yeah, awful to each other the whole time.
Whatever.
That's my only gripe, really, I've got a couple gripes. It's one of my gripes with this movie is just, how do you love her? I guess it's just shoehorned in.
Yeah, they had to make it some sort of a romance a little bit. So Spike and friends, which aren't really friends,
have a collection
going.
The security guy, Melvin, seems to be like his friend. Like, it's kind of neat that he has made connections
with people.
The
people who care, yeah. the photographer's the only one that doesn't. And he's the one making the least amount of money, too.
Yes.
Because he was the first guy, and all he got was $10,000 a week. Actually, I think the security guy's not making that much either.
No. So they've taken up a collection and a hat for him?
Yeah.
And I thought there was a nice moment with Spike and Monty here.
Yeah, he's like, let's go buy a Corvette and just drive across the country.
Yeah.
That's great. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, and then we'll stay in a cabin in the woods and we'll have girls brought in every other day.
I don't remember that, but that's
something
great.
About that. It was a nice moment. He's just kind of like, give it up. It's fine.
Yeah, and Monty almost tells him.
He does, and then mentions like, oh, I almost spilled the beans, Uncle. Yeah.
And then we have him hung over on his bed with everybody emptying it.
And emptying the whole floor. There's construction going on.
These people are rude and horrible. This guy gave you $1 million, and you're going to kick him out the second he's supposed to be gone?
And not to mention the people with the clothes, too. The moment the lease is up, they're there to collect.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if I was Monty, that would be part of my hiring them. I'd be like, look, I need this gone by midnight this day. Like, I need you here. This needs to be cleared out. I can't have this.
Right. I would plan that out, but I wouldn't like expect them to be there doing it without me, like while I'm sleeping on the bed.
While I'm passed out till 3.
Yeah. I'd have somebody wake me up and let's get that all taken care of, but I wouldn't have this all happening yet. They were rude.
Yeah.
The dude at the hotel just like kicking him out.
And he did it like he loved it too.
Yeah.
So Marilyn is finished with the room. He sees it. It just kind of looks like a nice office.
Yeah, he loves it. He's like, I could die here.
And she's just like, it's a bummer you don't have the dough to keep it. And just kind of tells the repo crew to come and take it all apart.
Okay, boys. And everybody comes in. Like, Extreme Makeover Home Edition.
Right.
Like, move let's get that this done. Bus. It just is emptied.
And he lost, the election was won or lost to none of the above?
It was none of the above won.
Right.
So neither of the candidates are going to run again, and there's going to be a new election.
Which, I don't know, that probably wouldn't happen.
I don't know, it sounds like a great result. You don't have either of these losers becoming whatever they were running for.
It's a great result, but I just don't know how realistic that is. Those dudes would have run again. Well, probably. I don't know, I mean, they're millionaires now, right?
Yeah, they got $4 million between the two.
I guess that explains it.
Yeah.
It's like, we're good. Either that or that was part of the settlement.
Maybe.
I mean, the legal stuff in this is fascinating to me. Yeah. I got to see these contracts. I got to see these cases.
Okay, so Monty arrives at the lawyer's office. Warren hands him the cash.
He shows up in the elevator, hands him the thing for $20,000.
Hey, I forgot this deposit. And Monty snaps again, and he walks into the thing and gives up, basically. And Warren's just watching from the hallway when Miss Drake shows up.
Yeah, and he spills the beans to her.
Yeah. And she gets upset and barges in.
Tells him not to give up, all that.
Yeah, as he's about to sign away the money.
This scene is done super well. It's tense because you have the clock shots.
Yeah.
And the clock sounds in the background.
Yeah.
It's just really, really done well for a goofy comedy.
Yeah, and they're fighting, and Warren implies that they screwed, and Monty stops her from hitting him.
And then
he
punches
says something
him.
Else, and he punches him. It's great.
And then tries to buy his, pay him off.
Yeah, tries to settle for $20,000 right there. And he says, nice try. When that clock hits midnight, you're broke. I'm going to sue you for everything you got, which doesn't make sense.
Yeah. He's a turnip at that point.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to need an attorney. Would $20,000 do as a retainer? I don't have a law degree. You can get one. It's a great scene.
Wouldn't an attorney on retainer count as an asset, though?
No, it's services.
And then end of the day, just beginning, like $30,000, just be like, you, $30 million retainer, just be my lawyer for life.
That's different.
That seems like an asset.
Maybe. There are a couple things that, yeah, you'd have to read the contract. It's weird, but he's paying for services. All that $30,000 would be used up by almost any lawyer for any services like that.
Yeah, that's true.
So that money's gone. It's
spent.
Yeah,
I don't know how that works. And I'm really curious how it works out in the Indian one, because they have a different legal system, right?
Yeah.
The ending's a bit lame. He does it. He just makes it. And
she writes out a receipt just in time. He hands it to the guy, and here we go. I'm going to investigate you guys for fraud.
I mean, when we do our remake, The ending has to be one of two things. It's either got to be he loses the money and it doesn't matter, right? Because that's like the, oh, it's better to be poor than to be rich.
Yeah, maybe.
So, then there's a lesson in it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be like this snooty hotel owner guy.
Yeah.
There's got to be either that.
He could run for office now.
Right.
And not spend a dime.
Yeah, or he's built up enough goodwill that, you know, his life is still okay without the money.
Yeah.
Or you do the thing where he makes all the money and he hires all those people to, like, you know, does philanthropic things. And you just end with a montage of all this awesome, like Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Just him crushing it at life. Like, Brewster cures polio. Like, or, I mean, polio's cured, but smallpox, Bill Gates style. Like, that's the kind of ending I wanted. I wanted the triumph. But it's just, he wins, end of the movie.
Yeah, I like that idea.
We gotta write this.
Okay.
So the ending song, I had to note this because it's written by Ry Cooder and Huey Lewis.
Okay.
Huey Lewis in the News?
Yeah.
It's called Nick of Time, and it's sung by Patti LaBelle from Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells.
Nice.
It's like an all-star song. You're not even impressed. No. Huey Lewis did Back in Time?
Yeah.
For Back to the Future.
Nick in Time, Back in Time. That kind of...
You want a time song, Huey Lewis is your man. We're going to him for the remake.
With or without the news?
It's without the news. Just Huey Lewis.
I don't know.
I mean, the Back in Time, yeah.
I like the freeze frame, the New York City skyline. Oh, it wasn't even a freeze frame. It was just a night shot of New York City skyline.
It's like the background of The Tonight Show. Just like a painting of the New York City skyline.
It was nice, though.
Yeah.
Twin Towers in the dark.
This is one of those... I mean, it's not an awful ending. It's just... It could have been better.
It could have. But it was a great movie.
The quality of this is pretty remarkable for just an 80s movie. It's not a laugh a minute.
No, but it's a good heartfelt comedy. Like, you enjoy this movie.
And it's well made. I mean, I would recommend this to people, but I wouldn't pitch it to them as, this is so funny, you're going to laugh your head off.
No, again, this is something, it's specific people, this is a great movie, watch it.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
This is on my list of, you must watch this at some time.
Is it?
I think so.
Like, does this make top 100 films for you?
Oh, yeah. Top 100 easily.
Yeah, maybe, I'd probably top 100 for me, but...
Half of our episodes are going to be top 100 for me.
I mean...
I don't know about half. Maybe a quarter.
Class of 44 is pretty good.
No. See, it's those ones that make me reconsider saying maybe just a quarter.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's Brewster's Millions.
I love the movie.
So next week, we're going to try and do The Last Polka.
Yes.
The TV movie. I think Timeline came before this one.
I don't know.
But I don't know. We decided we were going to do it because it's a classic.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I like it.
It's for free on YouTube, so you guys can watch before the episode.
Yeah, go watch.
It's, I kind of recommend it, because it's a mockumentary. Plot-wise, it's not going to be one of those things we can kind of go and tell the story.
No, it's going to be a short episode.
Yeah, you definitely got to watch it before you listen to
that. But there's some good music, some great characters.
Yeah. So, all right, guys. Head over to popcornwith.com and toss us a buck in the... is it donate or support us?
Support us link.
Support us. That's better than donate.
Yeah.
Who may just give me money?
No, I don't want to just give me money.
And just like a picture of us with our hands out?
Just doing the Dutch thing.
The Dutch. Oh, let's just grab Ethan Embry from that movie, just doing that and throw that in there.
No, we got to do it.
Is that Ethan Embry?
I don't know. No. Is it?
I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Come visit our website. PopcornWith.com. Find us on Facebook.
Yeah, find us on Twitter at popcorn_with. Or give us a phone call at 470-728-BUCK.
Thanks for listening.
You're welcome.
You suck.
Bye.
Bye.
Sorry, folks. Park's closed. The moose out front should have told you.